The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick, and we're here to continue our set of season positional reviews. And this tonight, we're going to talk about the offensive tackles. Joining me for that is Alec Pugliano. So, Alec, how you doing?
Doing great, Ken. Great to talk to you about offensive tackle. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'd rather be talking about the upcoming Super Bowl the Ravens are playing in, but yeah, we'll talk about that instead.
Yeah.
Tough transition. The Ravens are in the process of going through with replacing really both tackle spots potentially in a 2-year period. And I'm assuming now that they don't re-sign Ronnie Stanley, which seems less likely, I think, by the day. Where are you on that?
I think it's a top priority. I really think that they need to make it happen. It is too high risk to not have a left tackle, in my opinion. And I do believe that's something that I think signing Ronnie Stanley doesn't really change your approach in the draft. It doesn't really change your approach in free agency, other than like you wouldn't obviously sign another starting left tackle. But I think it's just too critical. The team's too good. And as a whole, that I just think is unforgivable to go into the season with any question marks on. So with the way that the team's set up right now, I think it's a top priority.
Structure of this, of whatever deal will be done for Stanley, will probably make it very difficult for him to sign. And it certainly will be a major commitment to the future, which will be the absolutely the only signing the Ravens have this year, no doubt about it. But they won't have another big signing regardless. If they let him walk, they won't have a big signing from anywhere else. It'll be their own guys. And so it's a matter, maybe a matter of retaining Stanley or some other really key people. And you can choose from Andrews or Humphrey, people are currently under contract. Or you can choose from Jones and Likely and Linderbaum and Hamilton and kind of pick who you're going to lose here. But they're going to lose some of those names.
Yeah, probably they will. I think the way I would structure it, I was talking to the guys. I don't know if you think this will get done. But I was thinking you give – they said the value is about $20.7 million. So we'll call it 21. I said if you do 3 years, $63 million with 37 to 42 guaranteed, $30 million signing bonus over the 3 years.
I've seen that structure.
Yeah, minimum salary. Yeah, I'm sure it's a lot like too surprising. Kind of a get out year in the third. I think that would be a setup that's palatable for the cap.
Bunch of void years or not?
I'm open to void years. Personally, I think that's the name of the game with these. When you have a top paid quarterback, that is what a lot of the teams are doing to keep the competitive window open. And I think for us, I think it makes sense. I mean, the team's right there. And frankly, I think just I like the idea of being aggressive with cash over cap. And I am okay with a reset year and eventually, personally. But I would be open to it. I think you can eat your medicine really quick in this league and reset.
Yeah, you know how I feel about reset years.
So, yeah,
I'm not excited about that. Okay, well, certainly can happen. I think the long term pieces are so critical, and the potential gain from dividing from the divisible benefit that is on the table with these third year players, particularly after they've seen what happened to Brandon Stevens, is potentially quite good. and they really ought to be signing some of those guys. And it will still mean they have to figure out left tackle somehow. It's an enormous barrier to entry position. Mm-hmm. It's very, very hard to get a left tackle who can play, and particularly get one who can play right away. A lot of teams have been struggling with recently, including one of the teams that's in the Super Bowl right now.
And that's kind of why I said it, Ken. You know, with left tackle, I mean, maybe, you know, Rosengarten's able to flip over and do well. I think that's potentially true. But you're still spending a top draft pick. You're getting a little lucky, right, at that point. And I just think that the Ravens are going to be competitive. Getting a top left tackle is going to be tough to do in the draft. And I think you could find a center in the third or fourth round much more consistently.
You're letting Linderbaum walk.
Sure. Yeah. I think honestly of the people that might have to be a hard decision, that'd be one of them, just because I think it's easier to find and later in the draft, just considering if you're a competing team, like how are you going to deviate your resources? I think you could use a fourth round pick on a center and be okay. And then, you know, similarly, I mean, I'm not losing Hamilton. It's right. I think that's another top priority. But you know, tight end, you know, I'm not here to say like we need to get rid of Mark Andrews. I would love to keep him around, but at the same time, I think we've proven year over year over year that we can find top tight ends in the fourth round. And things of that nature. So I think you have to be prudent about where you think you can draft replacement level plus for players, and like what positions are most able to get away with that kind of thing.
Right.
And I just think left tackle is such a risky thing, and can, you know, obviously you have this huge investment in Lamar, and I feel like you got to keep him safe, you know? So it's one of those things where if we're going to succeed, I think it just has to be a really high priority.
They have a lot of potential defections on the offensive line, potentially as many as four, with Cleveland, McCary, Jones, and Stanley all potentially leaving. The last three of them are all left, all tackles and all potentially left tackles. So that they cannot lose all three of those guys. They have to re-sign one. Mm-hmm. And none of them are going to be super cheap. Jones might not be too much money. McCary is going to be a pretty beefy, difficult to swallow mid-range contract. And then Stanley, of course, is going to cost top dollar. So any way they go, they're going to have to pay some money this offseason at left tackle. And that's going to dig into whatever budget they have for Travis Jones, Isaiah Likely, Linderbaum, if they want to re-sign him, Hamilton, Ardarius Washington, Daniel Falele, potentially. I mean, they've got a lot of guys who could be really good re-signings and give you some divisible benefit here. But, you know,
I think the reason you're concerned, and it's reasonable, is not so much for 2025, but 2026.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, yeah, and I get it. I think that's the tough year, is 2026. I don't want to say.
Yeah, like, well, why doesn't anyone else want to look forward two fucking years?
I'm totally cool with it, and you need to be worried about it now. I guess what I'm getting at is
I'm worried about 26 through 30. Really, all those years are important to me.
Yeah.
Jackson will be here, we hope, for all of those. And if you want to keep the Ravens as good a team as possible, you need to sign some cheap long-term deals right now. And you don't want to sign the testicles to the wall, hammer on the other side of them deal with Ronnie Stanley if that's the if it's going to be a potential overpayment.
It could be. I will say the one thing I'll add in is the Bills were apparently eating their medicine this year. They got to the championship round, and last year the Chiefs were eating their medicine and they won the Super Bowl. So, like, you know, there are years that people will consider a cap reset year or like a light reset. I mean, even for us, frankly, a little bit this year, we didn't spend too much. And teams do well. I think when you have top quarterback play like Lamar Jackson, it really does elevate the team. So I think you're able to get away with a little bit more. That's kind of why you're paying them so much.
Okay, but you're talking in generalities, and I'm talking in specifics. And we've got six players here specifically who are after 3 years and need to be re-signed, and they just need to figure this out. And you could add Adafi Owe to that group. He may be one of the players they have to let go, but that means you know another bunch needs to be spent in terms of draft capital to get that taken care of.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think it'd be cool to make a spreadsheet, figure it out. I think it's doable, but yeah, it's definitely tough. It really comes down to how lucky you get to with the cap expanding. each year.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the individual players who played offensive tackle for the Ravens this year. Ronnie Stanley, solid season. I've always said he kind of has a synergistic relationship with Lamar Jackson because he gives up some decent amount of pressure and gives ground to mirror, sometimes runs into Lamar a little bit, rarely lets the opposing defender get his hands on Lamar and rip him to the ground, kind of thing. And Lamar works very well with that sort of pressure. He's very able to get away from it. Stanley ends up with a lot of zero R's on the score sheet, which is, I don't think I've told people too often about that, but that means he gave up a pressure, but the quarterback ran him out of a pressure, so he gets only a zero, and then he gets a negative adjustment to his subjective score for that as well. Mm-hmm. But it's one of the ways that Lamar really helps his team is by running him out of a fair number of pressures.
Right. And I'm curious if Rosengarten would have that same ability if he were to switch to the left side. Because like you said, it is a huge part of how Stanley is synergistic with Lamar.
Has some of the same characteristics in not a great anchor. Seems to mirror pretty well. I can't put all the pieces together for him right now to say he's okay to move to left tackle, which, you know, means all roads kind of lead to hell right now in terms of whether you re-sign Stanley or you don't. I mean, you got a lot of risk you're taking on in either direction.
Correct.
All right. I liked how Stanley looked in terms of more mobility, got up the field better than any time since the injury. And, you know, we're talking back to 2020 now. All the time since he hasn't looked like the same player. Last year, he looked better, but he looked way better this year. And we kind of saw what was going on in camp, got a little window into it because he would make us wait forever to come to the podium. He had a very long post-practice routine. So he had a couple trips to the podium. First one got canceled. And the second one, there's only four of us still there when he finally showed up, which is probably about 40 minutes after practice. Mm-hmm. So he goes through a long process of probably both hot and cold and getting himself dealt with from a musculoskeletal standpoint after practice.
Truthfully. And that's actually those stories and his commitment to his craft and his body are what makes me a little bit more confident about giving him a deal. Mm-hmm. Long term, it's just because like I feel like he takes it very seriously, similar to Henry, into conditioning and making sure that his body's right. He had these horrific injuries that took him a long time to recover from. Clearly, it feels like that could be behind him now. Now, of course, he has the age curve coming along, but actually, mm-hmm. if you look at some of the top tackles in the league, they're old. You know, so it feels like a position that you could potentially be a little bit older and still have a good play. So that's one of the reasons I lean towards taking the risk of re-signing Stanley.
Okay. All right. I'm probably on board with it too, Net, by the way. I know it doesn't sound like it from some of the back and forth we had earlier in this, but it's a big risk. And this is a point I really my head's not going to explode, but I'm going to think less of the people who say, go ahead and get this wide receiver. Go ahead and get this tight end. Go ahead and get this running back. Go ahead and get this. Make it happen.
You don't
Ravens.
Need a
Come
wide
on.
Receiver in this offense.
Our window is so.
Yeah, that's where you're saving, right? You don't need to put $25 million in a number one wide receiver, you know, quote unquote number one wide receiver. You need to put it in your tackle or whatever. You need to put it in your, frankly, you know, free safety star position,
yep.
Hamilton. I think that's, again, the beauty of paying so much for Lamar is that he gives you the opportunity to have these, like, not fly by night. That's really underselling what Zay Flowers and Bateman have brought this year. But you can underinvest, quote unquote, on your wide receivers, which I don't think they have done. But you don't have to go crazy in free agency. And by the way, there's no dudes this year. You know, there's T. Higgins and a bunch of crap. So
good.
It's not worth talking about. They don't need it. That's not how this offense runs. And I'm excited about Tylan Wallace. You know, I'm like, get him back, get him a bigger role. I think he can produce. And you draft, you know, another fourth or fifth round guy. I think that's reasonable. And, you know, keep doing stuff like that. Occasionally get a first rounder, nice cost control. These are the kind of things you got to do as a franchise with the MVP, you know, top dollar quarterback. And that's what you see the Bills doing. You look at the Bills, you look at the Chiefs, ragtag, you know, wide receiver group.
And ragtag offensive line in the Chiefs case in terms of what they're trying to get by with. I am all for building a bigger, better offensive line. And I think they really are going to have to this year anyway. A lot of draft capital is going to have to be spent on it. It won't be free agency that brings guys in. The only free agents they'll sign, I think, will be their own guys. If they sign somebody else, it'll be a bargain basement kind of a signing, kind of like Josh Jones was last year. Mm-hmm. In terms of, not a lot of money spent anyway. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Stanley some more because we want to get through this. Mobility looked good. It was a bad year for penalties for him, mm-hmm. included 6 stalled drives, 8 out of 12 declinable fouls, which is really bad, 4 false starts. I don't like false starts either, by the way, but false starts yeah. are a lot better than the alternative, which is sure. illegal downfield, holding, hands to the face, all those ones, which create a option for the defense.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And it is interesting, the beginning of the year is so painful with Stanley because mm-hmm. he got sucker punched into all those penalties and never got called again.
IFs, yeah.
Yeah, but I do think it got cleaned up, like you mentioned, for all the offensive line later in the season.
It did, and he cleaned up most of his. So mm-hmm. not everybody did. I think Rosengarten was okay. Stanley had a couple penalties after
Linderbaum.
He
had a couple too.
Yeah, Linderbaum too. That's but Falele and McCary, big cleanup jobs, and Stanley to a degree also. Mm-hmm. You look at Stanley's season, and it's very common, particularly at tackle, where you face some great pass rushers to have a really bad game where you drop off the table in terms of scoring. Stanley had 2 failing grades. One was against Miles Garrett in week 8, the other against Philadelphia in week 13. A lot of Nolan Smith that game and others. But he really avoided the terrible games that he's had in the past occasionally and was generally quite good. If you look at Stanley's play overall and you'd hear me list out his grades, you'd still hear it's not an overwhelming set. He doesn't have a bunch of A's to offset his couple F's.
Yeah.
It's just a slightly better than average kind of a total. And I'll kind of want to go through where some of that occurred. So I know you'll probably appreciate this kind of thing. His raw score was up from 0.63 in 2023. Which was a D level of play for the entire year. I know PFF scored him a little better than that, not me, to a C this year, 0.70, 7 points better in this. Everybody on the interior offensive line is between 75 and 80 in terms of their final score, which is oddly not compact, but part of the thing is that playing the interior offensive line is a lot easier to do and the grading curve is less. So 70 is the bottom of the C range at either tackle spot, but you also it's before subjective adjustment. All these numbers are before subjective adjustment, which in his case averaged over 0.05 per game. So he would have been over 0.75. You put it all together, you have a C plus or a B minus for the whole season for Stanley. He looks about that on PFF. I'd say he's I didn't write down, but PFF had him something like 20th among all tackles in terms of scoring, and we're talking 2 at each position, so he might have been in the top third or at about the 67th percentile, 70th percentile, right around there in terms of his play.
That's surprising. It feels like he was definitely a little bit better than that when it comes to just the eye test as well, and seeing other teams at left tackle. But I definitely believe in your scoring and in PFF's ability to rank these guys and get a good picture. Do you think with PFF, based on your scoring, that because of how they rank rushing and passing at the same level, that maybe you would rank them a little bit higher? I'm not sure if you have that kind of broken down.
I don't think it's as much of a problem. I do have some of that broken down. I'm going to give you some of that in just a second, by the way, that would tell you. But he had a little worse of a pass blocking year,
okay,
as I score it, than what PFF has him. Okay, so here we are. So they have Ronnie Stanley was a 79.6 pass blocking score, which is 21st among tackles. And I've got to put a minimum of 50% of snaps on that for me to feel good about it. So he ends up being 18th at 79.6. And that's of how many guys who played tackle? 60 guys played tackle. So he's right at the 70th percentile, right there. Mm-hmm. He's got a run blocking score of 63.4. I don't know why we're doing the PFF scores first, because you know how I feel about it, but just want to get this out. He's 39th as a run blocker out of 60. So he's right around the other way, about the 30th percentile as a, mm-hmm. as a run blocker. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, here's how I scored it. In terms of his deductions from one, I can separate those out and tell you where they were. Missed blocks were 0.08. Those could have been on run or pass, but they tend to be more on run than on pass. Okay. Mm-hmm. Penetrations were 0.01 of the 30 points he missed. It was 1/30th of the problem was penetrations. Pressures were 11 points. And that was, I think, the highest of any of the Ravens offensive linemen, which is not too surprising because he doesn't really defend the cone all that well and depends on Lamar to get himself out of trouble. Quarterback hits and sacks were 0.06, which is also a little bit high as well. Probably not too high for a left tackle overall, and probably not too high for a tackle overall, period. But he actually was a little bit worse than Rosengarten in each of those categories on the surface. And we're going to get to why that might not be true when you get right down to it. And then penalties were 0.04. So that was a not insignificant percentage. Now, the only guy who was a little bit higher, Voorhees was around. No, McCary was 0.05, and Voorhees was like 0.07 in very limited duty for penalties. So they lost more significantly in terms of points. If I look at those numbers, I say the missed blocks are low for a tackle. The penetrations are very low, so he's not getting blown up a lot on run plays. The pass rush events are about as expected as a left tackle, maybe a tiny bit higher, and the penalties are higher than you would want. Right. But still, it's not, you know, at 0.04, it's not a huge percentage of the total deductions. So not terrible.
Historically, how's he been with penalties?
Let me give you some information on that if I can.
It's hard for me to just remember, you know, off the top of my head. I feel like he's not particularly bad, but I don't know.
He's bad last year. He had 10 penalties last year. No, actually, before that, I'd say, well, he's got a lot of lost playing time in these years. But I'd say he was very good from about 2017 through 2022. And he had a kind of a tough year as a rookie. I don't know if you remember that he had 4 holding penalties against the Steelers, I believe, in one game that year.
I don't know.
And then he came back and he was fantastic the second half. He was unbelievably good immediately following that game.
Nice.
That was probably the worst game of his career. Anyway, they are not as tight on pressure as I am. If you let somebody get in the cone and Lamar is short-stepping that ball, or there's any evidence that he's impacted by the fact that the cone is impeded there, then it's a loss of some portion of 2 points on that play. And PFF they don't count it the same way. They will be pretty lenient on pressures allowed to tackles. And you can definitely see it in the numeric counts. Now, they still may have a downgrade that underlies that will be in there like half a point or something. Instead, they negative half a point instead of a zero on a play. But to me, that's a pressure. And since mine's a deductions from one system and theirs is a go up or down from, you know, a 0 point, we're a little bit different that way, but we're kind of similar in the sense that if you think about game by game results, and a C for my game result is not going to change your overall grade for the year by too much. If you have a bunch of A's and B's, okay, let's start with this. If you had a B every game the whole year, you'd for certain be an A for the whole season, for certain, because it's a accumulation of positive contributions. If you're C for the whole year, you'd be a C for the whole year because you're right at the kind of a league average level as I'm trying to score it. And you'd be at that level. And if you're a mix of B's and C's, you're probably a B for the year overall.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And that Stanley was saying just slightly ahead. Anyway, I had something for the guards that was really interesting. The guards and centers, Timo Riska sent me information on how effective they were relative to their assignments. And I'll tell you why this is pertinent, even though I don't have it for the tackles from him. All of the Ravens had above average assignment difficulty and substantially above average. Like McCary had the third most difficult set of assignments of any guard in the whole league.
Huh.
And it was a combination of who the opponent is, but also what the game situation down and distance are. So if you're passing in an obvious passing situation, then you're more disadvantaged, for example.
Interesting.
So yeah, it was very interesting. So McCary ends up looking pretty good by his system, and also, you know, it actually I felt pretty good about giving him a B for the year at guard. He has some terrible games at tackle, so get me started on that. But we're not looking at him at tackle here tonight. So anyway, Ronnie Stanley, solid year. I really would not want to pay top of the market money for him given the year he had. And I don't know if that, you know, changes your opinion on this at all. And I think it would change my opinion if I saw Timo come at me with some incredibly high set of opponent quality or difficulty of assignment that was like similar to what McCary had. And I think the opponent is the opponent defense as a whole is part of that. Mm-hmm. So I think it could be true that Stanley faced even more difficult circumstances. He certainly didn't get a really high average subjective adjustment for me for the year. So we're not talking about a big difference, but we're talking about a difference that might move him up from probably as far up as a C+ to a B for the year, bottom of the B range, say.
Yeah. I think the tough part is, at least like if he goes somewhere else, I think he's going to get around, you know, 21 average value. Because if you look at the, like I said, if you look at the contracts, it's not top of market, but it's respectable. Mm-hmm. I think that gets you maybe a third, at least a fourth, right? Comp pick. Now you can't replace your tackle. You can't fix your tackle problem with that probably, in the draft, but, perhaps it's, a little bit of, you know, added, you know, in a trade. Be able to trade up to maybe get in position for one. So I don't know. That's going to be the tough part about tackle. I just don't. And I know I'm pretty sure this year is not a great tackle class. Don't quote me on it, but I believe that's the case. So, you know, like I said, I would want to approach this year with the opportunity to find another tackle or at least something top of mind, you know, even if you re-sign him, because you just have to have backups. You have to have emergency break class and emergency kind of guys like McCary was this year for us.
Right. Couple things about Stanley's play there. I don't think he got as much help from guard as he might have in other years, particularly when Ben Powers was here.
Yes.
Particularly when Marshall Yanda was in the protection he gave the right tackle when James Hurst was playing there for half a season in 2018. I don't think he got a lot of help. There he got some, but not a lot of help. And I also don't think he got too much chip and set block help, not nearly as much on his side as Rosengarten got. The entire eligible receiver focus was probably 60 to 65% on Rosengarten's side. And some of the remainder was in the middle, you know, picking up blitzes and whatnot. So it's, so what amount was left is really not that much. So Ronnie had to go it on his own, and Rosengarten was pretty much helped the whole year.
Right. Do we move on to him?
Sure. Solid rookie season for him. You know, what I just mentioned makes him very difficult to evaluate, the amount of sets and chips to his side, very much like Hurst in 2018. He was there, and I'll remind people, but they drafted Orlando Brown in the third round. And for some reason, he wasn't ready to play despite playing extremely well in the preseason. And Harbaugh, you know, was one of this rookies got to earn it thing. And I don't know what kind of message they were trying to send, whether they wanted him to get in shape, what they might have wanted from him exactly. But when he did finally come in, he was very good, and you know, was a hell of a player for the Ravens for 2.5 seasons, as it turned out. I think he made 2 Pro Bowls during that time, right? He made it in 19 and 20.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Okay. And then he got traded before the 21 season at the worst freaking time to trade him for a second round Well, I guess it was the pick that got him, Owe or Bateman, one or the other.
It was Owe. They got the they got a first round pick, but they had to give up their second.
Yep. Yeah. Okay, so they moved up. That's about what you expect. It was about a mid second round pick was the net value of that exchange.
Yeah.
Anyway, Rosengarten played rotationally for those first 2 weeks. Then he didn't play at all versus Micah Parsons in Dallas. So the Ravens must have still felt there was too much risk to have him out there potentially getting served by by Micah Parsons. But he began when Voorhees got hurt. McCary had to move to left guard in week 4, and Rosengarten had the job full time.
Yep, he never lost after that. And McCary really never lost his job. Obviously, Voorhees came in when he was sick, but Rosengarten, you know, he had that really rough first play, and then he was able to bounce back and progress throughout the season. Like you said, tough eval with all the help he got. Definitely something that you just can't do forever, in a way. Particularly, I feel like if you move him to the left side, it's just harder to help over the outside.
Yep.
And that's another, you know, facet to pay attention to. But for him to have such a good year in his rookie season, it is really reassuring, because that's uncommon with offensive line play.
It is extremely uncommon, and we should probably go through that a little bit. But Rosengarten, the sack against Kansas City was a sack fumble where he actually knocked the ball out himself. Kind of a weird play. I'd kind of forgotten about that until you just mentioned it. But it was just odd play in that first game. Definitely needs more body sculpting. Everybody says this about rookies, need a year in the weight room. Right. It's never more true than of Rosengarten, who really needs an improved anchor as well. And that's the harder thing to edictify into existence. Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tap, also on them. Service plan required for watch or tap. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app. Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
He's going to have to work very hard. It's obviously primarily a technique issue to improve his anchor to the point it needs to be.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's tough to see him, you know, it's tough. You know, you have the bye you have. So it's one of those things where hopefully he's able to add some more mass. They seem to always find a way. You know, obviously Wiggins gained like almost 20 pounds this year, and he's going to work on it some more. So, they'll work on it, and he strikes me as a guy with a good work ethic. I think that's one of the reasons they liked him coming out of college. So hopefully he'll be able to make that happen in the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely starting from a very good spot, and despite the difficulty in evaluating him and the fact that I don't think the grade completely reflects his achievements as well as much as the scheme around him, I think that he's starting from such a good spot that you don't often see for a rookie, that I'm still hopeful it'll work out. I just, after his first year, I'm not convinced he's moving to left tackle right away. I'm not convinced he's ready to do it. I think there's a lot of risk inherent in it. And it would really be nice if he stayed on the right side for a while.
It's tough too because our offensive line coaching situation might be a little bit in flux. Mm-hmm. Makes that decision really important. We know how important it is to have good coaching and the ability to elevate a line just from that. I believe Houston thought that they had some good ideas going into this year for offensive line and ways to improve, and then it ended up being worse than last year. And you know, you bring in higher quality players and then you get a worse result, you know, maybe that's coaching, right? So I think it's tough. I do trust, though, Harbaugh to make a good decision there. He's been pretty darn incredible when it comes to finding coaches. As I know you've commented with obviously the Munkin evaluation and the litany of defensive coordinators have gone on to be head coaches.
Returning Pagano today, that was a big one. Yeah,
very interesting. I saw there was an article they added too about why he came out of retirement. Curious to read that. I haven't read it yet, but I think that's one of the good things about the stability we have in our organization. We'll be hopefully being able to find a really good coach there to continue Jody's legacy.
Yeah. So the one thing I'll say very positive about Warhop is that him getting the penalties under control in the second half of the season mm-hmm. was a big thing for the offensive line. It was a very big thing. So hopefully that's something that I don't know how long he's planning to be here. I don't know whether it's, you know, one or two more years he might be here, but I hope for whatever time he's here that one of his major objectives is to identify and mentor the next great offensive line coach, whether that's Travell Wharton or somebody else. And it might be him, but you know, it kind of worries me that Travell wasn't given the job right away when Jody passed. So
the backup assistant offensive line coach went over to the Chargers, right? So last year. So I think that they were a little lower on the food chain.
So Wharton was already being hired as an assistant. Okay.
Because I think that was like the Greg Roman lookalike guy that people see in the booth.
I'll take your word for it on that. We'll have to keep going on this. Did not have a single failing game the whole year, Rosengarten. He did have three Ds. The last of those came in week 10 in that game against Cincinnati, where basically it was the last really bad game for the secondary that week. Is play down the stretch encouraging in terms of the move to left tackle? Let me give you just his final few grades here as I have it for Rosengarten. So he got, beginning in week 11 against Pittsburgh, he had a C against Philadelphia, A against the Giants, A against Pittsburgh, C versus Houston, B versus Cleveland, B minus versus Pittsburgh, and a C versus Buffalo. So really nice finish to the season with nothing worse than a C in a 9-game stretch there.
Right. That was the nice thing, that consistency. And also, it was Mike Devlin was his name, and he was the assistant offensive line coach from 22 to 23 with the Ravens, and the offensive line coach at the Texans, ironically, from the 15 to 20 season.
That's a not non-trivial coach loss that was not talked about, but I guess we all assumed Jody was going to be fine last year. And obviously that didn't turn out to be the case.
So follow up on that, but I think that's what I really liked about Rosengarten. Like you said, he's just consistently high play. You mentioned he had three Ds, but it ended in week 10, so end of the year, relatively strong. And that's what you want to see, right? You talk about it all the time with, you know, rookie wide receivers, how they do better in the second half. Well, it turns out basically all rookies do better in the second half, and Rosengarten was no exception.
Yeah, you really want is a good base for future performance, and usually it does create pretty much a floor on your play. There aren't a lot of rookies who perform at a league average level as a rookie, and then they go on to be terrible. It's not that common. Michael Orr would be the big one who could, his career is kind of a ski slope, but they also, you know, screwed around with him, moved him to left tackle. He's a guy who certainly should have stayed on the right side for his career. Might've had a Hall of Fame career if he had.
And if I recall correctly, you really liked Spencer Brown in the draft.
I did.
Yeah. He had an interesting career arc and is playing much better now. So it's one of those things where you know, you can maybe get better, but usually when you start off good, you'll remain good. Yeah, it's definitely good to see Rosengarten getting off to such a strong footing so fast. I remember just even last year going into the season thinking like, oh, maybe there's something with Falele when it comes to tackle. And then it turns out, you know, moving the guard and the way he improved over the course of the year was absolutely tremendous.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a big deal for the Ravens, obviously. Okay, let's talk a little bit about how his scoring broke down. So raw score was 0.73 for the season. So you're actually 3 points ahead of Stanley overall. Be approximately a B- in aggregate after adjustment. But look at the components of those reductions. His missed blocks were 0.10. So that's about 25% higher. Missed about 25% more blocks than Stanley did. Penetrations are 0.02 compared to Stanley's 0.01. So already you got Stanley 3 points ahead in the scoring. And then it starts to turn. Pressures, he had 0.09, and quarterback heads, hits, and sacks, he had 0.05, which picks up the 3 points in total that he had lost, and they're even. And then penalties, he only had 0.01, and Stanley had 0.04. So really nice year for not getting flagged for Rosengarten, and that ended up being fairly significant there. So he ended up about 3 points ahead. Penalties are a big deal, and declinable penalties are an enormous deal. So something's got to absolutely be avoided. It's also something... If you're looking at PFF score, a little bit of caveat emptor there. They don't rate them nearly down as much as I do. So it is what it is.
I hope he's able to continue that. I think the penalties is kind of like, I think you mentioned on one of your recent shows, maybe it was interior offensive line, like just the education of it's not worth it, you know,
yeah,
to commit these penalties most of the time. So just good discipline play, not getting in those positions. And yeah, I think that, hopefully that could be something that with coaching can be a line wide improvement and positive direction.
So the thing you're specifically mentioning, it's with two fouls in particular, offensive holding. It's just about knowing basically where the runner is, having a sense for that and being able to let go when the guy gets outside the frame. If, as long as you're not holding jersey at that point, it won't matter too much. The guy's probably still not going to catch your runner. If the runner is even, you know, with that, offensive lineman, he's going to beat him as soon as you let go of him, because he's starting again from zero speed. That running back's already accelerated. He's going to get to the edge more quickly and probably not be a factor.
Right.
The defender's probably not going to be a factor in the play. So just let go at the earliest time. But in the illegal downfield penalties, which is one of the things they reduced in the second half significantly, you just got to have better go codes for going downfield. I mean, it's not like RPOs haven't existed for a long time. They have. They've been involved in the game for a long time. Needing to avoid this penalty has been very important. And it seems like the Ravens are more susceptible to it because opposing defenders know to throw loose an engaged offensive lineman beyond the line of scrimmage. So normally, if you're engaged, you're allowed to go a yard. And it's really about 2 yards. They let you go downfield blocking a player. But as soon as you lose engagement, then you can be seen immediately. And if you get thrown free, the violence of that action is more likely to show you up as being in the wrong place where a linesman, one of the line judges will pick it up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know it's not as sexy, but I wish that was one of the things that was covered in Hard Knocks, you know, is to see maybe what they were teaching in the offensive line crew and maybe what led to that improvement. But yeah, I don't know if you ever watched it, but the last episode, I believe, they were talking about plaster. You know, they're going against Josh Allen. They got plaster, and they're so confident in their ability to plaster. And that was kind of a fun thing to watch. I think they did a good job of that during the game, for what it's worth. But but the Hard Knocks was really a pretty cool vignette into their the way they prepare for each week in the games.
All right, well, let's talk about, I want to talk about one other thing, and that is comparing to the other rookies. You talked about a little bit earlier how difficult it is to come into the league. This is a great year for offensive tackles in the first round. So I wanted to come back with all of the offensive tackles from the first two rounds, really, of this last draft that played at least 20% of the snaps and where they fit among the 87 PFF players in terms of pass blocking now. Who had at least 20% of the snaps played. And the big name is missing, by the way, is Kingsley Suamataia, who would have been at the bottom of this list, but did not quite make the 20% minimum. Mm-hmm. And I am taking the L on this one. I like Suamataia better than I like Rosengarten. And, you know, they went ahead, they picked Rosengarten. The Chiefs got Suamataia. And congratulations to the Ravens scouting staff for,
you know,
for picking
not,
what appears to be the
yet.
Right guy.
Yeah.
No, it's not over yet.
It's not over yet. But no, it is it's a good start for Rosengarten for sure.
So anyway, Joe Alt, who was started the run on left tackles by being drafted by the Chargers, who didn't seem to need a tackle at that point, was 23rd overall as pass blocking. Then we have the next highest rookie is Rosengarten at number 43 out of 87. So he's right at the 50% level in terms of his pass blocking, which honestly seems about right. So difficult to evaluate. His pressure and quarterback hit and sack numbers are kind of low as a percentage of deductions. But on the other hand, didn't have too many of those blocks. He had to make himself. So it is what it is. Fuaga was at 62nd. We're already talking about everybody here below this is basically at the 25th percentile or below. Amaris Mims, 64th. Guyton, 65th. Fashanu, 67th. And Paul, 73rd. So that is a pretty dramatic finish on how difficult it is to come in and play tackle well in your first season.
Truly, pretty staggering to see so many of them cluster in that 62 to 67 range.
Definitely
there's two outliers, right? Alt, clear outlier, and then Rosengarten a little bit above, and then basically everyone else is in that bottom 25 percentile, like you mentioned. Alt, just an incredible player. You never can have too many tackles in a way. I think it was a very wise move. And then their ability to go get Ladd, who I really adored in the process in the second round, instead of, you know, because a lot of people were like, oh, they're going to go get Neighbors, who obviously is a phenomenal talent as well. But I think they really did a nice sequencing, similar to how the Ravens were able to sequence Wiggins and Rosengarten.
Right. Right. Wiggins and Rosengarten it did end up being what looks like a great classic Ravens double of value there. And hopefully it stays that way. Some of the Rosengarten book is unwritten. I think the Wiggins book, we have a great feeling about what the floor is on Nate Wiggins. Just had the cornerback review today earlier.
Oh, nice.
So that'll be up just before this, and you guys can look back and make sure you listen to that cornerback review. How are you feeling about the move to left tackle?
You know, it's a risk, like you mentioned. I'm open to it. My evaluation of him, I thought he was left tackle. I didn't think, for what it's worth, I didn't think he would beat out Stanley, you know, this year. But I thought like that was why they drafted him, was in that with that in mind. Then Stanley has this resurgent year. You think to yourself, do you want to extend him? Like I said, I'm kind of in the boat of wanting to do it. I would understand if they didn't. And it's one of those things that the Ravens have proven time and time again that they're pretty good at making those decisions. Not always, sometimes particularly with left tackle. They're usually really good about these kind of decisions and know well, and maybe there'll be some bumps, but they'll figure it out. You do have Lamar Jackson to help bail out. So hopefully it could work out. Like you said, it is a risk. It's a very large risk. But it's one of those things that I will say, if it works out, right, if they do go down that route and he is a, if he is Stanley this year again, be a huge W, because I think they could figure out right tackle much easier for much cheaper. Yeah, that would be great. But offensive line play, I've over the years become more and more just like steadfast that you must ensure good offensive line play, just because I think it's the engine that really drives an offense, particularly with Lamar Jackson's ability to extend plays. If you give him protection, somebody's going to get open. Doesn't really matter who it is.
Yeah, they've certainly done a great job with that. And I'm scared to death, probably most scared. I was most scared about three new starters last year, but the Ravens had good depth remaining. You know, they had Ben Cleveland coming back, and they had Josh Jones signed as a backup tackle, which was more than what they'd had in the past. I didn't think he'd honestly be any good. He didn't play very much this last year, but he was something. And McCary, started the season at right tackle, and he ended up being legitimately good insurance at guard. They got something out of Voorhees, and I think from based on the week 18 play he had, I think 18, week 17. 18. It was against the Steelers. It was week 18. Oh. Okay.
It was the Steelers since 17, but yeah. Anyways.
Okay, so whichever week it was that he actually played, right. he had a good grade. I'll look at it in a second, but he had a good grade as I scored it, and it gave me enough hope for next year. No, it was against Cleveland. It was because Cleveland had given up. That's the problem. And so
yeah.
It was week.
I thought I thought it was Cleveland too, but yeah. Okay, go ahead.
All right,
same thing here, man. The hope that gave me was a lot. I think that's what makes it so difficult to resign McCary. I think he's going to be the odd man out. I believe he could start somewhere, right? And he might want to do that at this stage in his career and get that actual, like, a little bit more money. Because I think he would still be kind of deemed super sub here, and not really in the candidate for starting job. They wanted to be Voorhees last year. I think they still wanted to be Voorhees, but they didn't want to rock the boat. You know, things were going well. So
somebody who's actually watched his play this year, instead of just looking at his penalty count or just listening to Baltimore Twitter over, you know, they just can't stand who McCary is and whatnot, probably will find value at him. They'll probably keep him as the super sub, but one who has a starting position. So they won't mind. They won't have the same kind of need, compunction, I guess is the word I'm looking for, that the Ravens have to make one-for-one switches along the offensive line, which has served them very well. They'll be happy to slide pieces around and make three changes to fill one slot. Correct. If they have to. And McCary is the kind of guy who allows you to do that. So somewhere else, I think he could be very valuable to another team. And I'd love for the Ravens to sign him too. I don't know that the Ravens are going to be able to afford to pay him what he probably wants or deserves.
Agreed.
All right. Josh Jones. Oh, by the way, McCary played poorly in three games at offensive tackle, about a 0.64 aggregate. Interestingly enough, his best game was against Micah Parsons. So yeah. they shut him down more or less in the game. Did have a lot of help in the game, but still not sure how the Ravens would use him anyway if they re-signed him. I guess he starts at left guard over Voorhees, but or maybe he has the same kind of ease Voorhees in thing that they've tried before. Voorhees will be a second-year player, third year around the building, and I think it's time for Voorhees to make his earn his dollars for right from day one this next year. I don't think you wait any longer than this. You want to get 3 years of value out of Voorhees and not two, right?
I agree. Yeah, and like I said, you know, his ability to come back from that injury, the way he played in the last game, it gave me a lot of hope.
All right, let's move on and talk about Josh Jones then a little bit. Most of his action was either as a sixth offensive lineman, where we saw him a lot, particularly in the last couple of games of the season, or yes. in mop-up duty, where he played just a few snaps here and there. He replaced when Stanley ran the pattern against the Bills on that sack. He also had to sit out the next play, and Josh Jones came in and was at left tackle on that. I don't know if a lot of people noticed that, but that was in fact the case. Mm-hmm. A lot of people didn't like the fact that Stanley's running a pattern on that play.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. 0.75 raw score for Josh Jones. It doesn't really qualify as tackle scoring though, because it's a lot of it is as a sixth offensive lineman. So yeah. I don't really have a lot to draw from it. Also, it's also only one game of snaps in total to have 61. I don't really have anything to say. It looks like he could be a serviceable left tackle, but we honestly really don't know.
What would you think at right tackle?
Jones at right tackle?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think either position he could be a serviceable backup offensive tackle. And they were careful to not use him too much and not risk not having him available for that, particularly with McCary playing at guard, which I thought was smart. Yeah, they could have even made Cleveland the full-time sixth offensive lineman. They didn't do that, but the amount they used Jones was just not that much.
Yeah, I really got infatuated with the jumbo package, but I felt like once they felt confident in Kohler's ability to be back and the way he played, honestly, when he came back, he played quite well. They would just like that optionality a little bit better of when he's in there to block, because obviously he's a much more dynamic catcher than Josh Jones could ever be.
Of course. I mean, you get a receiving threat there. You'd want that. It's interesting that Jones, 47 of his snaps, and only had 61 for the year, came week 15 or later.
I believe so
it was really down the stretch that they used him. And I think that might have been in part was thinking, okay, we can take more risk with him now since we're closer to the end of the season with Stanley. Nothing's come up in terms of injuries so far, so there's nothing chronic showing up again. You take a little bit of risk. obviously, that something acute is going to happen right away, and he's going to have to immediately switch in and play left tackle. But yeah, I thought they were careful with him for most of the season in terms of not having him out there too much.
Agreed. That's why I asked you, if Josh Jones is the only guy they bring back, they move Rosengarten to left tackle. Do you even think he's possible at a right tackle competition? I think I wouldn't love it. I would have to be proven wrong again, kind of thing. I would be disappointed in that as our plan of action. But definitely a guy that if the price is right, I would like to keep around for sure, because he played quite well in his limited exposure.
All right, let's talk about 2025 needs here, because offensive tackle, I think, is the top need in this draft. If they lose even two out of the three we're talking about, and obviously that's Stanley, yeah, McCarrion, Jones, they really need to re-sign no worse than one of those three. And I would say hopefully they re-sign two, but the two would probably be like Stanley and Jones or McCarrion and Jones. It wouldn't be Stanley and McCary.
Right. Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see why offensive tackle is your top need in the draft. I'm a pretty staunch believer in defensive line being one as well. Luckily, yeah, that seems like a deeper position this year. I just don't want the Ravens to pull a Caillou Blue Kelly, where there's all these great cornerbacks and they just wait and wait and wait, and then they draft some guy and you're like, who? hopefully that doesn't happen. But I it's a premium position.
Defensive line, you're saying?
Both. Offensive tackle and defensive line, yeah.
Well, offensive tackle, they could definitely chase the market down. And cornerback, you could definitely chase the market down. I actually think you have more options at defensive line, and particularly since the guy they need on the defensive line really is a big body to replace Pierce at this point. And they've had success going to small schools,
yeah,
with both Pierce and Brandon Williams, and getting players who were unheralded talents. And even Travis Jones to a certain degree. I mean, Travis Jones, not as highly touted a college prospect as many others. He fell a little bit. The Ravens, yeah, got him cheap, but he wasn't. A lot of people said his film wasn't very good at Connecticut.
Perhaps I'm getting greedy. I do want a Matabike Jones profile, let's say. Third round, profile at D-line this year, particularly because it takes time to develop him. But he can't solve everything, right?
So all you want is Matabike Jones or Brandon Williams type player in the third round.
Done it before twice. Yeah. No, I know it's, yeah, not easy, right. Maybe I jest, but that's one can dream, right?
Yeah.
Similar to what I said, though, because of the it might be a deeper draft, it might be doable this year. So we'll see.
Same dream here also. So I'll buy it. It'd be nice. One of the nice things about re-signing Jones is they might be able to go to a developmental offensive tackle. So if they could sign Jones for 2 years and you find a way to weight room guy the offensive tackle the first year, rotate him in the second year, play him the third year, that might be a way to get a developmental player in the door. You can't have a developmental leash that's any longer than that, but you can't have a 1.5 year leash. A 2 year leash is very dangerous. They've done it with Valele effectively, moving him to guard this year, but he did at least have some playing time at tackle before that.
I keep an eye out for them to find a reclamation project as well. Ravens kind of love doing that on offensive line, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if they find an offensive tackle. Some guy that was drafted in the third round, showed flashes, didn't do anything in the one place, and they bring him in and they see what they can do with him. Wouldn't be surprising at all.
That would be great. I mean, the Arizona Cardinals certainly have thrown off a lot of garbage in terms of their over the years. And frankly, Josh Jones is one of those guys, in terms of if you're going to look for reclamation products, go to a team who has a proven track record of consistently crappy tackles. And then maybe you find out it's a coaching problem. Yeah. Last question here. Can Lamar succeed? Can the Ravens run game succeed if they have a poor offensive line?
Probably. I would say probably. It's one of those things where I just don't want to I don't want to go down that route. I think it's a very important position. Like, I'd rather have a good offensive line that than a good wide receiving core. So yeah, that's just kind of the way I value it. But yeah, I think they could succeed. I will say though, the running game is very, like, again, you don't want to mess with it. It's so important, particularly in playoff football. We're seeing the game slow down. We're seeing less possessions. The turnover is more killer than ever, as we learned all too well. And I'd be hesitant to decrease our ability to run the ball at will. I think that was one of our secret weapons, so to speak. You always hear the defense is saying we stop the run first and then we go from there. And there's a very clear reason why. That's a very obvious path of why you would want to strategically tackle it.
It's a secret and completely unsecret weapon of the Baltimore Ravens that they have the most potent offensive weapon in the entire league in the Lamar Henry mesh point. So I don't want to do anything that would reduce the value of that either. You don't need guys who are great to execute that. You just need guys who are adequate to execute it probably. And I'm not saying you go for adequate. Yeah, I think you need to shoot higher from that to hope you get adequate.
Correct. Yeah, I think adequate I'm okay with. Poor is where I get concerned. Right.
And if you shoot for adequate, unfortunately you're gonna get three adequates and two poors.
Probably so. Very true.
All right, Alec, always a pleasure talking football with you. Tell folks where they can talk online with you.
Sure. You can find me on my website, polianis.com, or on Blue Sky or Twitter. One Money Pod, we actually recorded our last episode, but I would love you checked it out. It was our vignette series. We do just a little one or two line blurb about each player, kind of recap that team, because you're never gonna have that same group of guys again. The Ravens are obviously hoping to bring back a big core in 2025, but it will be a different team. A lot of rotational deeper players will be gone, so check it out. And I'll keep doing shows with Ken for sure, if he'll have me after our cap discussion. And that's where you can find me.
Alec, you're always welcome on the shows. One of the most willing guests of all time is Alec. So if you're a local content creator and you need Alec to come on for any kind of immediate pod, like maybe to discuss what happened today in terms of the coaching changes with the Ravens, would be one thing. I know I can always call Alec, and five or six others that I can call on that too, but Alec's outstanding.
Yeah, thanks, Ken.
Well, thank you for all the times you've been on this show. Other folks out there, hit me up if you got an idea for a short for this offseason. This is the time for it right now, before we get heavily into draft content, which will, the free agency will hit, and then the draft will hit after that. And by April, we're going to be talking nothing but draft until the draft occurs. So the next 60 days or so are the chance to get your short topics in. Got a bunch of ideas for them. Hit me up. Email is fine at filmstudy21@verizon.net. You can also hit me up directly on Twitter with a DM. I'm also looking for people particularly who want to take the why John Harbaugh fired side of the argument and any discussions about John Harbaugh. I'm trying to put together panels that will do that and have a honest back and forth conversation about it. And ideally the most balanced people, but you can certainly be an anti-Harbaugh person, still pretty balanced. I would want to have on that show. So good representation is always important. Alec, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today.
We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.